Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world with a fighting chance against the Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And we're pesky.
I don't know, man. I was told the season is already canceled because the Dodgers have too many good players. Everyone forgetting at the same time that baseball does not work that way. We are going to talk on this Friday, December 22nd, that Yoshinobu Yamamoto is indeed going to the Los Angeles Dodgers for a healthy pile of cash, which he will be getting over the course of the years that he is playing for the Dodgers. Imagine that, Jake Mintz. No deferrals for Mr. Yamamoto. It's his money and he needs it now. That is going to be the first half of our show. How we got here, finally, thank goodness. No disrespect to Yamamoto, but I am happy for this chapter to finally be over. It was getting pretty exhausting to be online with
so, still waiting. I disagree. It didn't get to me in the same way. You're selfish because you didn't want him signing on your honeymoon, which is totally understandable.
It wasn't even, I mean, yeah, we weren't getting that close to that. But yes, that was at least a tiny part of it. But no, I mean, it was more about how it was impacting the fan bases involved, which again was in some ways very entertaining. We're going to get to all that. And then the second half of the show, kind of a grab bag of topics. We're going to hit some of the RSN mess that is certainly impacting some spending for some other teams that are clearly not the Dodgers. Talk about the pre-arbitration bonus pool, which absolutely fascinates us.
The delta between how interesting that sounds and how interesting it is enormous. Pre-arbitration bonus pool is like fucking nap time. But yes. I promise you, it is very weird.
Trust
and bizarre.
Us. Trust us on this. And then we'll hit a few more topics on the back half of the show. But we must begin with the biggest contract a pitcher has ever received. Sure, by only $1 million, but that is how it works in this business, as agents are constantly looking to set new standards. And yes, Jake, it has happened. The Dodgers have done it. They've signed Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and while with the Ohtani thing, it felt like only a matter of time. When we began the offseason, it was like, well, at some point, Ohtani will sign with the Dodgers. This took a very different path to get to that point, and Ohtani is certainly a large part of it. But let's get to the basic facts. 12 years, $325 million. It is understood that there are multiple opt-outs involved in this contract, the specifics of which are not totally clear. Now, Andy Martino, when he reported on the Mets and Yankees bid, said that Yamamoto and Joel Wolf, his agent, were seeking opt-outs after the fifth and eighth years. So we can assume it's probably somewhere in that range. That's what I would guess anyway. When you kind of look at, you know, his age, he could very easily make a bunch of money and enter the market at the same age that most regular free agent pitchers make it. So whatever, there's opt-outs in there. 12 years, $325 million, most dollars guaranteed to a pitcher in baseball history.
And then the Dodgers will have to pay Yamamoto's team back in Japan $50.9 million, I believe, for the posting fee. Mm-hmm. The posting fee, the way that works is it is a, it used to be a flat fee, like there was a cap on it. That's different now. There's a percentage of the contract as it goes up. And because this is a $325 million contract, the Oryx Buffaloes are getting a nice hefty chunk of change, baby.
Yeah. And by the way, that's very important. Not that most people listening care about the Oryx Buffaloes finances, but he had to be posted, right? You know, there an interesting trend, of course, if we've seen more of these Japanese players come over, some of them reach, like Yuki Matsui with the Padres, who we touched on briefly. He was a full, you know, at some point you reach full free agency. The Buffaloes did not have to post Yamamoto, right? But ultimately, with some of these contracts now, they're reaching levels where it would be almost financially negligent to pass up the opportunity to get these massive posting fees. And so that's why, of course, as much as it sucks to give away, he's done all he could for them. And of course, there's a respect and understanding of what these players want to pursue in MLB. There's real reason for these teams to let them do it, and that's what the system allows.
Who is Yamamoto? We've talked about it a little bit on the show before. He is 5'10". Okay, that's the first thing.
That's the first thing? That's the first thing you're going to say is he's 5'10"?
I mean, look at him. First impressions, baby. They're important. He's 5'10".
That's true.
He's 5'10".
That's true. If you turn on the video, that might be one of the first things you think.
Yeah, that's a small boy. And the picture of him, any picture of him standing next to Otani is so funny because it looks like, don't talk to me or my son ever again. Like, Otani is just... Everyone looks small next to Otani. Like, he's so wide. Yeah. Yamamoto is a shorter guy. He won 3 Sawamura awards in Japan. That is the equivalent of the Cy Young. Okay. He has been the best pitcher over there for the last 5 years. Like, he, and not just like the best pitcher by a mile. His ERA is under 2. I believe he has a 1.65 ERA over the last 3 years combined.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about the most accomplished Japanese pitcher that we've had. They're just pure statistics. I know he's only 24, so like it's not like he's racked up a full decade, but when you talk about just dominance in Japan as a pitcher, and there have been some incredible pitchers, obviously, many of which we've seen come to MLB.
Scott McGuff.
Yamamoto is unrivaled.
Yeah, Scott McGuff.
Scott McGuff has absolutely been dominating over there. No, it's true. It's true. And so we've seen that when they compare, it's, you know, we talk about the debates we have here with you know, LeBron versus MJ. It's Yamamoto. Usually been Yamamoto and McGuff. Yes.
And McGuff.
That's my understanding.
Yeah, me too. The pitch mix. So fastball's 95. Second best pitch is a splitter. Third best pitch is a curveball. He's got a cutter that he'll use sometimes too, and then a slider that he's kind of developing. I will be curious to see how that pitch mix is altered once he reaches MLB. The fastball splitter combination won't change. For me, I'm mostly interested in the curveball. We've seen teams move away from these big kind of loopy Kershaw Wainwright style curveballs in favor of a tighter sweeper or more side to side break. And he's going to be good even if he just throws 2 pitches. But having a third pitch is going to allow him to be one of the best players in baseball. So for me, like, the question mark with him is, what is the third pitch? Because the fastball split combination is going to be awesome. Now, he could still use the curveball. Like, the curveball is still a valuable pitch in the big leagues, right? Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how the Dodgers will kind of alter some of that stuff.
Yeah, I think it seems like a pretty good bet. I mean, we saw it with Senga. He leaned a lot more into his slider sweeper, I'm not sure what it's called, and had a ton of success with that in a way that we maybe weren't necessarily projecting. But I think back to like Darvish, you know, when Darvish came over, he still had a really, really slow curveball that he used sparingly, but he used it, and it was a fun pitch to still have as an arsenal. The degree to which it worked for him in Japan, or Yamamoto in Japan, the slower curve, I don't anticipate that happening here, but I don't think he's going to get rid of it completely. And the whole reason why he's this good and why all of the numbers are so ridiculous is because he also has essentially elite command, elite on-mound athleticism. Everything that you could want in a pitcher is there. It's just that he's smaller than normal. And so that is where the bet on, you know, long-term bulk, let alone durability, is somewhat of a question mark. Of course, we talked about that topic with Mike Farren recently. There's some truth to that, and there's probably some myth to that. But listen, 12 years to any pitcher, I don't care what size they are, that is an absurd commitment under any circumstance.
Think of all the relationships in your life right now. How many of them are going to be around in 12 years, right? Mm-hmm. I'm confident that I'll still be with the person I'm marrying in September, mm-hmm. and I'll still be friends with Jordan. The rest of you, no faith. No faith. 12 years is a long time.
Kind of end of list at in the non-family department. I think that's a fair fair assessment. But yeah, so that's Yama.
Yes, yes, new friends.
Yes, and I think that let's so that's Yamamoto, the pitcher, and we can talk about where he fits on the roster, whatever. He fits on every roster. I think that's important. Right. But I want to talk about like the 12 years. Like, how do we get here with him signing with the Dodgers? Okay, I think that's an important next place to go, because I think about, you know, when we talked about with the Ohtani, okay, we're giving him the biggest contract ever. All right, it has all these deferrals, whatever, $700 million, however you slice it. Okay, at worst, it's $460 million. That's also the biggest contract we've ever seen in baseball. All these things. And, you know, it was easy to make the reference and say, oh, Andrew Friedman said, okay, if you're, you know, rational about every free agent, you're going to finish third on every free agent. And that's true, and it felt appropriate to bring that up in the case of Ohtani, because Ohtani was his own thing. But that was the other thing. Ohtani was his own calculation that is going to bring in such a... From a business standpoint, and all the reporting around the Dodgers, how the Dodgers viewed this, was it does not matter. We want this guy to be a Dodger, regardless of the risks associated with him being a two-way player, regardless of the fact that we're going to be paying him, although apparently not paying him that much money per year, to be a DH, potentially. All those things, he's his own calculation. This commitment is an example of Andrew Friedman punting rationality to the moon and deciding, fuck it, like, let's just go get the best player, a player that we believe in. And my big picture takeaway, as I've kind of tried to start to digest this, is, was this the plan all along? Because that is the part that we were spent so much time focusing on Ohtani. Now, we know for a fact the Dodgers didn't intend to sign Ohtani at the start of the offseason with $600 million deferred. We know that, right? We know that was not their idea. At the same time, it is hard to not look at this and be like, oh, wait a minute. Like, we were so focused on New York for Yamamoto, and I'm sure that that was a real thing, that it's possible that this was their hope when they, you know, in the very secret small circle of the Dodgers front office, when the deferrals began, that the goal really was to actually get both of them. And I'm sure we'll get some more reporting on that to begin with, but that's the part that I've really been thinking about so far.
Andrew Friedman walking into the meeting like Veruca Salt. I want it all and I want it now.
Right, because even understanding that the Dodgers have seemingly limited funds, like, we weren't thinking about them as a package. We were not thinking about this. No one felt reasonable to be like, oh yeah, they're going to get both of them. You know,
okay, so the Ohtani taking less money, right? He did it because, one, I do genuinely believe that part of it is because he wants to win. And yeah, he wants the best roster possible.
Totally.
The Dodgers did it because it allows them to sign Yamamoto. And Ohtani is going to end up with more money when he's 50 because of the tax stuff. And so it is like a win-win-win all around. And like, this is the immediate direct benefit of that. The Dodgers are going to be way better over the next couple of years because Ohtani took less money. Or took the money in the way that he took it, right? And totally. I think that's notable. I want to talk about how he fits into the roster.
Sure.
And what this means for one, Mr. Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. This crossed my mind too.
Right now, projected rotation: Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Tyler Glasnow, who they traded for like last week and extended. Okay. Walker Buehler coming off of Tommy John, who should be healthy for opening day, who was like competing for Cy Young's before. Okay. Bobby Miller, who was spectacular last year as a rookie. Almost said freshman. That's very funny. And then the five spot is some combination of Emmett Sheehan and like
Yarbrough.
I mean,
and then they have so many of those guys who have either debuted, like Kyle Hurt, or close to debuting, Landon Knack, River Ryan, who, by Michael the way, Grove, as Sam Dykstra points out, MLB prospect, one of our favorite prospect guys, born the same year as Yamamoto, a lot of those guys, right? So it's like they fit in the same timeline. All those guys, I can imagine one of them having a massive spring training, and it's like, okay, maybe that's five.
Right. The Dodgers are comically good. Mm-hmm. They're so good. Sure. This is a juggernaut. Yeah. That is not, I'm not putting my neck out on a limb there. Okay?
No.
You don't need to listen to this podcast for someone to tell you that the Dodgers roster is impressive. Okay. Sure. I want to have the conversation about this from an entertainment perspective. Okay. Mm-hmm. I love it. I think I'm in on it. I'm always wary about the rich getting richer in baseball when the stingier teams cry poor and don't spend, because it is hard to look at the Pirates and the Dodgers and be like, how is this fair? Okay. Mm-hmm. This team is spending more money than this team. I think that when the mighty fall, the mightier they are, the more entertaining that is. Okay.
Yep.
Now, if the Dodgers win the next four World Series, I will come back on this podcast
and say this is,
and I will say this sucks.
Yeah.
Okay. This sucks. Right. But we're not there yet. Okay. We might be there, but for now, I am actually excited to watch this thing operate.
Yeah. And like, honestly, like, I mean, again, there's a few different conversations, because there's the strictly from a, okay, these teams are the only ones that can spend the money on these players, right? Or are willing to spend the money on these players. It's both, right? Both of those things are true. And okay, sure. Dodgers fans want to say, well, he didn't even take the, it wasn't just about money. He took the same, he took even less, or he could have taken more from the, it's like, listen, you're still in the running because you're the Dodgers. You're still in the, you're the reason you are a finalist is because you are the Dodgers, okay? And again, there's a lot of other things involved, but whatever. There's that, and then there is the strictly baseball standpoint of, is this make, are these making these teams too powerful and too good? To which I say no, because it is baseball. And that is why we got all the same jokes last night. Okay, they're going to lose to the 86-win Reds in the, you know, in the first round of the playoffs. And
oh, my God.
Possible. But like, this is a great thing about our sport, and why, like, you know, in basketball, we did have a situation where Kevin Durant went to the Warriors. And the way that people reflect on that now is, that was literally like, there was no way they were going to lose, and they didn't, right? There's no version of a baseball team where that exists in the modern game. And that is a beautiful thing that we have. Whether they're going to be projected to win 110 games or 120 games or 130 games, I don't care, right? It's not going to matter.
Also, listen, it's not as if this team was like chilling in the weeds for the last decade. Won the NL West every year except for 2021.
Yeah,
right.
And Dodgers fans. Yeah.
This is not the Dodgers elevating to a level that is like
different. This is not. Yeah, it's a new flavor. It's a new flavor. Yes, I admit
it's,
that. Like,
it is more intimidating and imposing because it is literally showing. Like, Betts, Ohtani, Freeman is three Hall of Famers. That's three Hall of Famers. That's nuts.
I feel way stronger about like that element of it than as much as I believe in Yamamoto is going to be great. Then looking at the rest of this roster, and again, we've done versions of this. We just, like, I know it's different because I trust the Dodgers to win way more than the Mets and the Padres. But the Padres in particular, we were losing our minds over that roster a year ago. We were. We absolutely were. It was the same thing. It wasn't saying they're going to lose 120 games. We were saying, this is the greatest lineup of all time. Look at all these pitchers that they've assembled. We were doing the same thing. We were.
But the Dodgers infrastructure is a completely different
100%.
Thing.
Like and that's why we trust this team to absolutely win 100, 110, whatever games. That's fine. But to your point, until we see any team win, let alone go to multiple World Series, this is a good, like, this is fine. There are problems with it, but it's not the Dodgers' fault, okay? The Dodgers are, just because they're the ones willing to spend, remember, they got revenue sharing that's going to all these other teams who are pocketing it and saying, oh, sorry. What can I do? You know, sorry, TV deal's crumbling up. I can't. Sorry.
Your team's not spending. Don't like it. Get a richer owner. Like,
right. It's not the Dodgers are not. You could say the problem, but you can't be mad at them. Right. And to your point, from an entertainment standpoint, sure, all this good players going to one team, which again, I still think overblown because, again, these are individual cases that we are blowing up to an extreme degree. It's fine. They become the target gets even bigger. And that's part of it. But guess what? Just because they know that they could get knocked out by the Reds in the DS doesn't mean they shouldn't keep trying to get good players. That should not be pushing people away from trying to improve. That's the biggest problem with the whole 54% thing, is because it's accepting, oh, it's all random. How much better do I really need to get? I just need to get in. That is not a mentality we want to see. No. The Dodgers are saying, fuck it. Sure. We know we could lose because baseball is random, but we might as well try and win as many games as possible because in theory, that's the whole point.
Also, this and Ohtani more than Yamamoto, like, they are making themselves a big freaking deal. Yeah. They're drawing new fans in, right? In the same way, say whatever you want about those Warriors Durant teams, right? Mm-hmm. That grew the brand of the Warriors to an outrageous degree on an international scale. Now, baseball and basketball are different in a million ways, right? But like, that's significant. The Warriors, I understand that they had won a couple times before Durant showed up, or they won once, right? Mm-hmm. I understand that they were a big deal, but it elevated them to a different level of notoriety. And like, I think a similar thing is going to happen with the Dodgers. What the Dodgers want in the same way that when you go to fucking, you know, Uzbekistan or, you know, Madrid, there are people in Yankees hats. They want something similar to that. That is what the Dodgers are trying to build. And they have every, like, that's the goal. If you're like Mark Walter in the Guggenheim group, you, frankly, you did not invest and buy this team to win the NL West. You know, to outlast
you're certainly not
the Diamondbacks.
Particularly motivated by that anymore. I mean, that's
no,
been
well,
the case
today.
We've done that many times, and that's they're clearly not satisfied.
And that's why this investment, in my opinion, like the Ohtani one, makes a lot of sense. Let's pivot to New York.
Yeah.
Do you think Yamamoto was like, because there was a lot of reporting like he's really wants to be in New York, like he loves New York. Does he think they're still in Brooklyn?
Does he think the Dodgers are still in Brooklyn? No,
he picked
I don't.
A New York team.
I don't think so. I don't think that's the case. I think, again, like, I think we get back to sort of back to the Ohtani thing, but this is more because it seems like he was more seriously considering going to other things. Ultimately, we talk oh so much about the money and oh playing with Ohtani. It's just like playing with the Dodgers sounds pretty cool. Sounds pretty fun.
I would do it.
Playing with the Yankees. In some respects, sounds fun if you're a certain kind of guy, and it seems like it's not like Yamamoto was ducking that. But there are parts of it probably more fun with the Dodgers. And also, if you're so focused on winning, there's undeniably more questions with the Mets and Yankees in the short term than with the Dodgers.
I don't love LA. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine making $27 million a year, driving to Chavez Ravine with your top down, knowing that you're about to take a field with Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, and Freddie Freeman. Could you imagine how much fun that is? Like driving, oh my God, yeah, winning your hair. It's always
good,
nice out.
Right?
Holy shit, dude.
And so, again, like that doesn't mean that there are still some people that desperately want to be Yankees, and that's the thing. Yankees, you still get to have that. Gerrit Cole, Southern California guy, was dreaming his whole life of being a Yankee, and now you got him. And that's been great. You know, that's fine. So, whether to overanalyze it or not, and by the way, the people be like, oh, well, the Yankees only offered $300 million. If they had gone to $325, maybe they would have gotten it. Maybe so. Mets reportedly offered the same deal as the Dodgers. And some Mets fans saying, oh, if Steve Cohen was making this a priority, why isn't this the one where he's outbidding teams? And okay, I guess you could say that, sure. Ultimately, like,
because maybe, like, this is the thing. There's always going to be a guy every year where it's like, this is the guy you do it for. Next year, it's going to be Soto.
We're talking about the Giants and Red Sox,
right,
who are also desperate to sign him and clearly didn't, let alone keep Phillies in the mix. The teams didn't even come close. So it's tough for the Yankees and Mets. It is interesting because how they each move forward will be fascinating, because the Mets seem to be so focused on, like, he's our big guy. If we get him, great. If not, we're going to keep play chill.
Right.
Okay, that's fine, but that doesn't mean Mets fans are totally signing up for multiple years of not being good, especially when I still think your roster is capable of being pretty good if you add a few of the right pieces, whereas the Yankees, there's no patience at all for obvious reasons. They need to figure some shit out sooner rather than later.
Yeah, the Yankees need another pitcher in the rotation. That is on their wish list. That's to be done. Cole, yeah. Rodon, Clark Schmidt, Nestor Cortez, the five spot right now is just like Clayton Beater, or there's been a lot of Will Warren buzz, but they need another veteran to take a spot because, I mean, between friend of the show, Carlos Rodon, and Nestor Cortez, like both of those guys were like last year, and how much do you believe in Clark Schmidt? And like, they just need another starting pitcher. Been some Jordan Montgomery buzz on them. I'd be shocked if they get Blake Snell. Like, that just is not.
Yeah, no, that makes
the
no
vibe.
Sense.
Two native lefties.
I feel like they will continue to be aggressive via trade. Like, I still think it's a farm system that they can deal from. Feels more likely that they'd rather do that, even if it's for Cease, than spending another big on free agency again.
Like, Bieber feels like an interesting fit for them. I know that the Guardians are usually hard to trade with, but the Yankees do have so much of the type of pitching depth that you would imagine the Guardians would be interested in.
Sure.
So Bieber makes sense. Corbin Burns maybe makes a little bit of sense, although it seems now like the Brewers are going to hang on to him. But whatever it is, the Yankees need another arm. They need another right-handed arm in their rotation to feel good moving forward. The Mets, I think, are done. Like, I don't think they're going to really add to the rest of the roster this offseason. Next thing. Mm-hmm. They're very interesting. Mm-hmm. The Red Sox and the Giants are in a very similar boat. I want to start with the Red Sox, okay? They're head honcho. They're like the rich business boy. What's his name?
Tom Werner.
Tom Werner, thank you. The business
He's basically the one that's not John Henry because John Henry never speaks in public, but Tom Werner is like the top of the, like, in charge of all the Red Sox decisions above the, you know, chief baseball officer since they don't have a Pobo.
He used the phrasing full throttle to describe this offseason.
Yeah, I think that was maybe when they hired Breslow.
Yeah.
At some point.
How's that throttle been? Let's see. So far this offseason, here's the throttle.
They've acquired Tyler O'Neill.
They traded for Tyler O'Neill. They traded away Alex Verdugo in exchange for Dick Fitz, Greg Weisert, and Nicholas Judas. Mm-hmm. They signed Roberto Perez to a minor league contract.
And they gave Cooper Criswell guaranteed major league contract for $1 million.
Wow, dude, full throttle. This new Fast and Furious movie sucks.
The Giants and Red Sox are in a very similar place because they are both have standards as organizations that should be much higher than the way that they've played. They have money that they've been trying to throw around and have failed to do so. The Giants finally succeeding in landing Jung-Hoo Lee. The Giants have been average and boring. The Red Sox have been entertaining and bad the last couple of years and are in both face very challenging situations in their respective divisions. I would say both are probably projected for around 500 as things stand, if not a little bit less. They are the obvious places for both Snell and Montgomery in some form, let alone maybe particularly for San Francisco, Matt Chapman. I don't really see the Bellinger fit as much anymore there after signing Lee, but I think Chapman still makes a ton of sense there. I think Rhys Hoskins still makes a ton of sense there. They are going to find a ways to keep spending more money. And I think Montgomery would honestly be an awesome fit in Boston, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I think that would be, but I could see them doing Snell too. So there's a long offseason. Still a lot of guys left to get a good chunk of money. And I think these two teams are going to be pretty desperate to do so.
Missing Yamamoto puts them in a position where they have to do something. They have to. I know the Giants already got Jung-Hoo Lee, but they need more help. The Red Sox need more help. And I think the Red Sox are in a slightly even tougher spot just because they made promises. The Red Sox hired they hired a new chief baseball officer. Yeah. And when they did that, they say, we're changing our tact. Breslow was brought in to do something different than Chaim Bloom, right?
Yes.
And all Breslow has done so far, I know it's early, is operate with the same level of conservatism.
Yep. Restraint. As careful. Bloom. Like these nice moves, but it's like, do you want to finish last again?
Right.
So I agree. But again, like it's not like the Giants haven't been also publicly desperate to be trying to do stuff and then haven't actually done it. So I think they're really similar situations and they're both fascinating to me. I just feel like, you know, for the Giants in particular, like we're not really talking about catching the Dodgers anymore. Like we're just trying to get in a position to where we feel like we can make the playoffs. You know,
I think it's also about selling tickets.
Well, yeah, 100%. Well, and I think Jung-Hoo Lee's a great effort towards that, but we're going to need a few more interesting players than that.
It doesn't matter if you win. Like, there are multiple ways to win 83 games, okay? Mm-hmm. The Colorado Rockies, for all their awfulness, at times the last couple of years have been a more entertaining watch than the Giants. But they're worse. Well, you know, like, the Giants have had so few players that I'm, like, interested in tuning into. Yeah. And I think that that is a notable deal. Yep. Anything else on Yamamoto before?
There'll be more takeaways, but it's a huge deal, and yeah, I'm excited to kind of hear the degree to which the Dodgers are like, oh yeah, like we kind of wanted to do this the whole time. The real plan A was Ohtani plus Yamamoto. So we'll get more of that in the coming weeks for sure.
My last thought: I think one of my favorite things in baseball is the starting pitcher appointment viewing.
Mm.
Because in our sport, unlike football and soccer, there are not games that everyone is watching at the same time, right? Mm. And that's a bummer. And that's kind of what I like about Sunday Night Baseball is that it's everyone watching one game. And that's why we love the playoffs, right? Because it's everyone watching one game. Same thing with the WBC. When you have a starting pitcher who is notable for some reason, whether they are making a debut, like when Strasburg came up, right? Or they're just on an insane run on a heater, like R.A. Dickey, right? Or Matt Harvey, where everyone is like, hell yeah, that guy's starting, I'm watching. Yamamoto for April, every start, I'm locked in.
By the way, and they could still add another pitcher, although I wouldn't expect it to be someone in the top three. Who do you think starts opening day?
Who do I think starts opening day? Yamamoto.
Okay. Yeah, probably.
Either Yamamoto or Buehler.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, yeah, it's between those two. But I think the Buehler thing is interesting because, like, I've just, like, moved Buehler aside. There's real questions with him. And the other thing is he's entering his last year of his contract. There are already Dodgers fans tweeting about, like, the 2025 rotation. Holy shit, you know, with Ohtani, with all these things. And we're just getting rid of Buehler. People are acting like he's gone, you know? Like, when that dude was on, man, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball, too. We don't know for sure that we're going to get that. But that's one that we haven't even, I feel like I haven't even fully factored into my mind yet. And we'll know that pretty soon in spring training, I have a feeling. So anyway, all of which is to say, holy shit, this is a super team. But also, like, you know, they're still starting Chris Taylor on left field. You know, how good are they really?
The harder they fall, baby. I saw some tweet that was like, Kyle Schwarber's, you know, homer to knock out Yamamoto in game five of the NLDS. Hey. Like,
that's what we're heading towards, and it's gonna be a hell of a fun team to watch. Like, that's the other thing. Like, it won't necessarily matter how many wins they're piling up. I mean, if they make a run at the Mariners record, like, yes, that will be good for baseball. It will be. But it won't matter until, you know, they can win a game. They were swept. The Snakes swept. They embarrassed them. They pantsed them. They said, get out of here, you guys stink. That just happened.
We glazed over this. Kershaw.
No, I know. Where is he done? Does this make him more likely to go to the Rangers?
I think it makes him more likely to
retire. No. I think to me, it's even, there's so much more cushion. There's like even less pressure to have him to come back. So you can basically take it easy. He can go
He's pulling a Brett Favre, Roger Clemens.
That's what I'm saying. He could just be like, you know what? I'll show up in September.
So, I mean, that's the other thing. Right, like one of Yamamoto, Glasnow, Buehler, Bobby Miller is going to be bad or hurt. It's just math.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And so they will need another starter at some point. But can you imagine you're in AAA and you're one of these 95 amazing pitching prospects the Dodgers have, and it's like, finally my chance. And Clayton's like,
one of those guys will be awesome in spring. Meanwhile, Ryan Pepiot is like winning the AL Cy Young.
Has Kershaw thrown his last pitch for the Los Angeles Dodgers?
No. Either he's thrown his last pitch. I think he's coming back to the Dodgers if he is coming back. But who knows with the shoulder. Shoulders.
So you would say coming back for the Dodgers, not coming back, coming back with the Rangers, yes. Coming back with non-Rangers Dodgers.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I don't think that the depth chart being more crowded makes him less likely to come back at all.
One thing no one's talking about. Huge hole in the Oryx Buffaloes rotation. Kershaw to Japan.
Oh, interesting. I was like, okay, yeah. He's like,
open up your third.
I was about to start pulling up, you know, what other foreign pitchers have been pitching for Oryx recently, but
people always say, Rangers, Dodgers, Buffaloes.
We're gonna take a quick break, and when we return, it's time to talk about the pre-arbitration bonus pool. I know that's what everyone wants to hear about on this Friday, but I promise you, it will be worth your wait. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
Hey everyone, producer Chris here with a brand new housekeeping note about our merch. Basically, we have a bunch of new stuff. So if you've been looking for a Baseball Barbercast themed beanie or bucket hat, or even a t-shirt with one of those cool pockets on the chest, well, you can stop looking and start buying because they're all available right now, just in time for winter. Just go to podswag.com/baseball and don't leave yourself clothesless this winter. That's podswag.com/baseball.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast, Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. The Yamamoto deal is easy to understand why it is zippy and full of fun. We are going to do something that, just please trust us, If you're still listening, you think we're somewhat entertaining and insightful, and we promise this is good. Jordan, what is the pre-arbitration bonus pool?
So, as part of the new CBA, one of the biggest issues was pay for players who have not yet reached free agency is kind of whack. And with the extreme uptick in young players getting to the big leagues and being some of the best players in the league, but also making league minimum, it was like, how can we reward players who are really good before they are in arbitration or before they have signed free agency? And so what they decided, what they kind of settled on, was a pool of $50 million that at the end of every season was divvied up between essentially the 100 best players who are pre-arbitration. So usually that's players within their first 3 years of their major league career.
That does include players who have signed extensions.
That does include players that have signed extensions, and we'll get to that in a second. So it's a pool of $50 million that, based on the best players, now we're going to get to how they, you know, designate the best players in a second. In addition to that, players can also receive bonuses for winning awards. So this is from the AP. You know, eligible player gets $2.5 million for winning MVP or Cy Young, $1.75 for second in the voting, $1.5 for third, or $1 million for fourth, fifth, or all MLB first team. Okay, $750K for rookie of the year, $500K for second rookie of the year, or all MLB second team.
The point of this is to make sure that those young players are getting paid more money earlier on in their career when they're being really good. Because we've had situations where those guys are underpaid at the beginning. They reach free agency and teams were then paying them for what they might be, not for what they had already accomplished. Okay.
And this is still a fraction. I mean, this is still not even close to what they are actually worth when these players are, you know, 3, 4, 5 war players. But it is something. And I do think it is a step in the right direction and a creative way to do so.
Now, the reason we're going to talk about it here is that it's funny. It's funny because there is an enormous pool of money being divvied out to various players. And the mechanism, the way that these players are being graded, ranked, and analyzed, we don't really know. It is some sort of nebulous war calculation. But what we do have are the specific amounts of money that each of these players was given by the league. And that gives us a absolutely hilarious ranking of all of the pre-arbitration players by money ordered in a way that you would not order it.
Yes. And so that is what makes it so interesting. So now some of the players at the top who got the most, now Julio Rodriguez received the most money in this bonus pool of about 1.8 million. Now 1 million of that was for finishing fourth in MVP. So that is kind of its own, like that's just on top of it. So really, for what he performed on, which he was also top five in WAR among these players, was around 800K. And so really, if you take out the bonus amount of money for each of the players at the top, and that includes Corbin Carroll and Gunnar Henderson for Rookie of the Year, and some of these other guys who were all MLB team or all MLB first team or second team, you start and you sort that those totals. And again, this is all on the AP. You can look this up. You see a ranking that is, having looked at this, this is not an F4 ranking. This is not a Baseball Reference WAR ranking. This is a secret WAR formula that maybe we will get to hear about sometimes. I remember during the negotiations a couple years ago, there was some leaks that the MLB was interested in doing like an average of Baseball Reference WAR and Fangraphs WAR. That is not what this is, based on me having plugged in the numbers for all these players. The point is, like you said, it is essentially a ranking of all of the pre-arbitration players in baseball based on how well they did this season. And some of them are impossible to square. And so, which brings us to a small game we are going to play, which is who was apparently better in 2023, according to the league, because they are telling us with how much money they awarded these bonuses.
Who got paid more? Jordan has the list in front of him. I do not. Jordan, give me two players and I will tell you who got paid more.
Okay. So again, we're going to keep it focused to the ones below, because the ones at the top, again, if you haven't seen it, the top bonuses or the top was right. Julio Rodriguez, Corbin Carroll, Adley Rutschman, Spencer Strider, Justin Steele, Kyle Bradish, who was up there because he, I believe,
Cy Young or
might have even gotten all MLB bonuses. Yep. But anyway, so Bradish is up there. Okay, great. But let's go down into the, you know, the 200, 300, 1,000 range. Okay, ready? Here are your two players. Who received a larger bonus? Josh Young of the Texas Rangers, okay? Or Yennier Cano, the reliever for the Baltimore Orioles.
I'm going to say Yennier Cano.
Josh Young, slightly by about 30K, but okay, that's a little tough. You know, it's a different position. You know, but I will say the positional adjustments here were strange at best. Okay, next.
And Josh Young like missed a lot of time.
Josh Young did miss a lot of time. That's true, but he's still up there. Okay, next up we have Jazz Chisholm, okay, or Brian Abreu, okay.
I'll say Jazz Chisholm.
Jazz Chisholm slightly, just by 3K. Okay. All right. Next up. Here we go. Ready? Jarren Duran.
Whoever the other person is.
Or Tristan Cassis.
Oh, teammate. They were teammates.
They were teammates. Who do you think got more? I mean, again, the Red Sox were not very good, but both of them played a lot. And you can look at their stats and you can try and figure out. Like, we know Duran, we were not necessarily believers, but he had a nice season.
I'll say Tristan Cassis.
Tristan Cassis, not in the top 100. Tristan Cassis did not receive a bonus, according to the AP, while Jarren Duran received, I believe, 200, like more than 200, yeah, 338K. So Tristan Cassis, is a bit of a trick question there, is one of the ones that I cannot figure out why he did not make the top 100.
That's insane.
Whatsoever.
He had a 129 OPS plus. He hit 24 homers and was worth 2.2 B.
And he played like the whole year. Anyway, yeah. So again, how is this possible? Okay, let's do another one here. Okay,
we'll finish third in Rookie of the Year.
He sure did.
So wait, yeah. There are other people in Rookie of the Year who were below him who got paid. Josh Young.
Correct.
Yoshida,
correct.
Edouard Julian, Anthony Volpe.
That is absolutely correct. And I could not tell you why that was the case. All right, let's do another a pair of starting pitchers. Okay. We'll do Bobby Miller, who was listed on the AP sheet as Robert Miller. That made me laugh.
Awesome.
Bobby Miller or Cole Reagans. Cole Reagans.
Bobby Miller.
Bobby Miller, close, very close, nearly only like a 10K difference. Okay, so that one is kind of a fun one. Okay, let's do a pair of catchers. Catchers are very interesting here. Okay, how they order the catchers? Of course, we have Adley at the top. Here's one for you. Ready? Francisco Alvarez.
Oh, he's higher than he was like one spot higher than someone who was better than him.
Or Jake Rogers.
Francisco Alvarez.
Jake Rogers raking in $364,000. Some people say, Jake Rogers, who's Jake Rogers? Jake Rogers, I don't know if he was like a god with the Tigers, but Jake Rogers somehow getting more than Francisco Alvarez. I guess
so.
Francisco.
Jake Rogers hit 21 home runs.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
You could have been like, he had 10 at bats, and I would have been like, go Tigers.
The catchers, again, catchers, we get Naylor's on here. Jeffers is on here. Kirk is at the bottom. No Shea Langeliers. Sorry to him. Gabriel Moreno, maybe a little bit lower than expected.
So, like, Moreno is lower than Jake Rogers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here is another one for
Give me one more.
Yeah. Davis Schneider.
Who
okay.
came up
Brandon
in, like,
Donovan.
June. Did they... Oh, Brandon Donovan and David Schneider did not overlap, I believe, in the big leagues this year because Donovan, his leg exploded at some point, and David Schneider didn't come up until like August.
Right. So that was the thing. And David Schneider, I didn't realize Brandon Donovan's injury was that significant, but yeah, I guess it did because he was basically done in July. So that's true. Only put 95 games for Donovan. But indeed, Brandon Donovan did not make it despite still being worth about two wins.
I'll say David Schneider.
The babe does make it with 265K. He's snagging the bonus. So, you know, there are a couple other guys on here where you like Matt Wallner, for example, did not make the list, even though he was like a 2+ win player. He kind of got screwed. Johan Rojas was not rewarded for his incredible defense. Evan Carter, I know it was like a month, but he amassed more WAR than a lot of these players. He did not receive a bonus. So it is just a fascinating one. Although there is one. The one that pisses me off the most, obviously I'm biased. The relievers here. Okay? This is the last one I'll hit. Okay? Here are the relievers that receive bonuses. Class A, now that's for his, you know, all MLB second team. Bautista at the top, that's fine. Cano, Abreu, great. Doval, great. Bednar, great. Jason Foley, Yoan Duran, this is in order of highest bonus. Jason Foley ahead of Yoan Duran. Tyler Holton, so we got two Tigers relievers. Joel Piamps.
Piamps,
yes.
Piamps.
Adbert Alzolay and Javier Assad. No Matt Brash. How in the world? Matt Brash, easy top five reliever in the league and is below all of these other guys. So explain yourself, MLB. I would love to know how you're calculating this WAR formula because some of this makes no sense whatsoever.
What about intangibles and friendship?
Apparently.
How do you calculate that? You know, if a rookie pre-arb guy comes up and he's a great hang.
Where is our game gone, Jake? Where
That's
is
what
our
I'm
game
saying.
Gone?
To Makes the nerds. Sick. It's gone to the nerds, brother man.
The nerds that have decided that, you know, Braxton Garrett was better than Brian Baio, which
whoa.
Anyway, this is fascinating. You can find all these numbers on the AP. Shots at AP.
Jordan. Yep. I am going on vacation today.
Yes.
And I will not be doing too many live shows over the next couple of weeks. And so we are going to zip through some minor topics here over the next 10 minutes before we say goodbye.
Let's do it.
Alex Verdugo did his press conference with introductory press conference with the Yankees, during which he lauded Aaron Boone's Savages in the Box speech and referred to him as, quote, a head coach and not a manager. What are your thoughts?
Love this. Very funny. Verdugo kind of throwing some shots at Cora. Oh, he didn't want a guy that has my back, blah, 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 blah. Cora was on Rob Bradford's podcast being like, yeah, like we had our differences. We learned a lot about each other. Still believe him as a player, but, you know, maybe it's time for a new thing. Alex Verdugo, very excited, I think, to be somewhere else. And I do think he's going to be a good fit.
Ugly with no beard. He is uglier without a beard. He looked better with a beard. The Yankees should let him have a beard because he looks weird without a beard. He looks very naked. It looks as a very naked face without a beard. Respectfully, Alex Verdugo, I hope you enjoy your time in New York. We have new rules. There are some new rules that were instituted. What are they, Jordan? What are the new rules?
So it's mostly, I guess only a couple of them are actually new rules. First thing is the pitch clock is getting even faster. Used to be 20 seconds when guys were on base. Now it is 18 seconds.
Hurry up.
So players are clearly not happy about that. One thing that they changed is that pitchers who start warming up at the beginning of an inning cannot be replaced.
Love it.
We've seen this a few times. Apparently 24 times this season, which is not very many times, teams brought in a pitcher to warm up and then changed him before he faced a batter in a strategic, you know, maneuver. And they were like, that's dumb. That is a waste of time, which I agree with. So we're done with that, even though 24 times is not would seem to be enough to be like, this is a huge issue.
24 annoying times. Yeah,
they are annoying. That's true. Mound visits. Now you only get 4 instead of 5. Love this. I'm in favor of you should have 1 mound visit. I think that would be this is a great example of I don't give a shit how uncomfortable it makes pitchers. And this is fantastic.
You have all the time in the dugout to like chill and talk to people.
Yeah.
Like. Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah,
I my big takeaway with a lot of these rules is deal with it. Mm-hmm. And players just need to deal with it. Like, just deal with it. Just deal with it. Like, sorry. Don't like it. Pitch faster.
There are a couple other minor pitch clock details that are not that interesting. But the real fun one that is an actual rule change that is a smart thing that should also be in college baseball is the runner lane, Jake. Now,
I don't want to get bogged down in this.
Okay. So, well, the point is there have been so many. One of the dumbest plays you have in baseball is when there is a ball in front of the catcher and the runner is running straight to first base. And if he basically does anything that is not running in the direct straight line, he can get called for interference. Now they are basically widening the runner lane so that the runner can have a little bit more room to not get pegged by the catcher.
Great.
This is good. This is not good.
Rule change I didn't see. Can I bring my alligator into the stadium now, or is that still against the MLB rules?
That feels like a pressing issue based on our experience last year, but it does not sound like they have adjusted those rules.
Damn.
Yeah. So those are the no rules. We don't have that many strong thoughts on them. So there you go. Other thing that, again, we were going to touch on with the Dodgers, but I would encourage everyone to read the story from Alton Gonzalez on ESPN about the RSN, latest with the RSNs. basically how people watch baseball and the cable deals involving literally like half the league are drastically changing because Diamond Sports Group is bankrupt. And so some teams are really feeling the hurt of this. Is this a real thing that is impacting teams' revenues? Yes. Is it also an extremely convenient excuse for teams to be like, oh no, sorry, can't spend any money. Sorry, our TV deal's bad. Yes, it's also that. And so just read all of that with a grain of salt and recognize that it is very frustrating. And hopefully we will end up in a more healthier space. But as it stands right now, it could continue to be a problem.
And remember the Evandrelic corollary, Evandrelic at The Athletic. If Evan is writing about it, I'm not interested, but it is important. Mm-hmm. Okay. That is his beat. Important things in our sport that are
not fun to read about.
Not fun.
Probably pretty boring, but it is a big deal. And so this is, I've kind of shrugged off the storyline a few times this winter, but at some point you are going to have to read some of the details and be like, damn, this is not no bueno.
It's like the debt ceiling. You know, whenever like America's debt ceiling is in the news,
you're like, damn, that sounds important.
I'm like, I don't get this, but I hope they figure it out without me.
Anyway, so no, but truly, I mean, I would encourage maybe if this continues to loom over the offseason and no one spent money into February, you know, we can take it a little bit more seriously. But for now, I will be patient. Do you want to hit a couple of the other transactions? We did have a somewhat significant trade. Let's hit that quickly. We didn't hit it with the Mets earlier. The Mets acquiring Adrian Houser and Tyrone Taylor from the Milwaukee Brewers for Coleman Crowe, who could have been taken in the Rule 5. They got him from the Angels last year for Eduardo Escobar. Got TJ late summer, not going to pitch much in 2024, but has, you know, some interesting pitch characteristics that teams covet. At the same time, anyone could have taken him in the Rule 5. Nobody did. And now they trade him for two pitchers or two players who will help them in 2024. Not exactly star acquisitions, but they desperately need innings. And at the very least, Adrian Houser can provide innings.
And Tyrone Taylor is like kind of sneaky underrated.
He's good.
Essentially a career average hitter who can play the outfield pretty well.
Yeah, and it seemed like, you know, the Brewers have so many of these younger guys coming up in the outfield, like Mitchell and Frelick and Weimer, and we're going to get Churio soon, and they're just like, we didn't really want to pay this guy. Brewers, again, continuing to cut costs is not great, but understand it.
Yeah, if it is a decision to keep Burns and try and win this year, then we can evaluate it when that happens.
Yep.
On Adrian Houser, actually two things. He's the last pitcher to homer twice in a game.
Not in one game. It was over the course of a couple weeks. I don't think we had any two homer pitcher games, but he did have two home runs in 2021. Mm. One of, I think, three pitchers that had two homers in 2021, the final year of pitchers hitting. The other one was Shohei Ohtani, and the other I'm forgetting, and I will find it while you talk. But that's not the real. I mean, listen, Adrian Houser could bop and hit two of his home runs off the same pitcher. But there's another thing that he is unfortunately known for.
He puked on the mound twice, two separate times.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a little specific. It was very watery.
Yeah.
Puke. Yeah. Both times. It was not like I would not say he blew chunks if we're going to get into it.
Yeah.
It was a very wet type of throw up. However, there is an enormous distinction, my friends, between being the guy who vomited and being the guy who vomits.
Mm.
Okay? Between the guy who has vomited once and the guy who has a reputation for vomiting.
But he did do it twice. He is a multi-vomit guy.
That's three,
now you're really not beating the allegations.
No. So. One, you vomited once. Two, you're a vomiter. He's a vomiter. He's a chucker,
vomiter.
Up chucker. He's a puker. That's fine.
Shouts out to Huascar Yanoa, the other guy with two home runs. Mm. In 2021,
does Adrian Houser vomit on the Mets this year? If he does, I can't wait. We're going to have a picture of him in a Mets uniform on the mound vomiting, and all the Mets fans are going to quote tweet a picture of it and be like, that's how I feel about the Mets too. Me watching the 2024 Mets.
Here's the thing, man. Dude's going to get a lot of chances to vomit. Like, it is setting up for 30 starts of Adrian Houser.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And pending global warming and how hot the New York summer is going to be, I just hope he's prepared. The Pittsburgh Pirates made two moves, one of which makes people happy, one of which makes people kind of sad. Andrew McCutchen is back. Mr. McCutchen, who is still a completely fine major league hitter, nothing more, nothing less, is back in Pittsburgh once again, 1 year, $5 million. They also signed Martin Perez, an all-star not that long ago, for 1 year, $8 million. He joins Marco Gonzalez in the veteran lefty stabilizing force in the Pirates rotation. But Kutch, I mean, I love Andrew McCutchen. I'm glad that we get to keep watching him play. And I really do hope that the Pirates can make strides in a certain direction. But these are the kind of moves that it's like, okay, that's nice. I'm glad McCutchen's back, but I'm still not feeling great. I believe our good friend Craig Goldstein wrote at BP today, why aren't the Pirates having the Royals offseason? They won 20 more games than Kansas City in 2023, and instead they are working still around the margins, and that is a bummer.
I don't believe what I'm about to say, which is always a good thing to say. If Kutch can do his last season for five more years, there's a Hall of Fame, maybe.
I mean, sure, absolutely.
Maybe.
Absolutely. And which perhaps we will adjudicate at some point.
Oh, hell yeah, baby.
get Kutch on the ballot. Let's go. I want Kutch to be on the ballot when we become voters in 2033.
The whole point of sports is to develop connections between institutions, athletes, and the city in which they live. And for all the faults of the Pirates, Andrew McCutchen being in that city and meaning something to the people who live there and care about him is very cool. Mm-hmm. However, I don't want that to be a crutch and a shield for the organization.
Yes.
To point to McCutchen and be like, look what we have. Still cool, though. We can appreciate McCutchen being there and also criticize that organization for not doing enough.
Amen to that. One more move before we wrap up this show. Yankees claim Jeter Downs on waivers.
Funny.
I've never seen a move more for the retweets. With all due respect to Jeter Downs, who has been a very disappointing prospect, I don't even know. As far as like move to in MLB impact and like Twitter engagement to MLB impact, this is really one that it was about as lopsided of a ratio as you're really ever going to see. But hey, it's fine. It's funny. Yankees claim Jeter. I get it. But he's definitely not what he once was.
The best tweet was someone being like, Derek Jeter is no longer the leader in defensive runs saved for people named Jeter on the Yankees.
Yes. Jeter, well, don't be distracted by the Yorbeet Vivas. That's the move we should really be focusing on. Okay. Jeter Downs, it's funny. Okay. It's no. Let's keep our eyes on Yorbeet. Although I will say, and I tweeted this, remember the number 18 jersey number available for both of them. Sorry, we're not saving this shit. Now they're going to be like, no, sorry, this is for Roki Sasaki. I'm like, all right, dude, you keep telling yourself that. Okay, I think we're gonna cut it off here. I have one more important piece of business that I will share here in a moment. But just for give people an update for kind of what we're doing moving forward. On Monday, Christmas, we will not be recording. On Monday, we've already recorded a podcast for you fine folks for that Monday.
Merry Christmas. Merry Chrysler.
We will be talking about the Hall of Fame. This is our Hall of Fame special edition, breaking down the ballot. Most of the time spent on the newcomers on the ballot, because those are players that we have real opinions on, more so than players that we did not watch quite as much. Of course, we have some opinions on those too. I know we're getting all kinds of crazy ballots out there. We'll say we can even talk about that more, you know, as Hall of Fame season rolls on. But that is just our opinions on the ballot and who we would vote for in the scenario that we were actually voting. So you will hear that on Monday. Jake, I know you are off to a very lengthy vacation, and I will also be traveling in early January for my honeymoon. So bear with us as we, you know, have some scheduling conflicts where we got some pre-records. We have another pre-record that we're very excited about that you guys will be hearing on New Year's. So a lot of stuff in the works. So stay tuned for all of that. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. And one final important piece of info about our podcast and just something that we're going to be kind of promoting over the next month or so. This is something that we have talked about on this show before, but wanted to shine some light on it again because we are going to be involved directly in benefiting this cause. And that is our friend Kendall Gomet. Kendall and his family, his wife Molly and their two boys, who have been dealing and suffering with the effects of long COVID over the last 4 years. This is something that has changed their lives drastically in many ways, and they are now asking for their help. For our help in a lot of respects to kind of help support some of the financial costs that they have incurred over the past few years to you know live a life as well as they can. Kendall's been one of the most important supporters of us back to when we started this whole thing 10 years ago, and anything involving supporting Kendall and his incredible family is something that we support. So all of that is to say, why am I mentioning that to here on the podcast? The first thing, you can find information about their GoFundMe on our Instagram page. We're going to share a little something on that. Also, put some stuff out on Twitter. But also, for the purposes of this podcast specifically, we are also going to be doing an auction, auctioning off the possibility to join us here on an episode of Baseball Barbecast. Come be on the show. We're kind of nailing down the details. I think you should just come co-host a show with us. This will be come co-host the whole show. You could do a Friday show. Come do Good, Bad, Ugly. Come do the whole thing. Let's do it. We'll do it before. We'll do it at some point, probably before spring training would be my guess. I'd probably target late January, early February.
And you can gift it too. So if you have a Baseball Barbecast fan in your life.
Yeah, that's a great idea. If you want to bid, if you want to auction, and again, we'll run this on Instagram. We'll have the auction open in the comments over the next couple weeks. Again, the proceeds will go directly towards Kendall's GoFundMe, which we encourage you to donate to anyway. But yeah, if you want to just bid and support this cause and then have someone else host with us, that's also fine.
If you want to come on the show, if you're listening and you're like 15 or 14 mm-hmm. or 13 and you don't have a Christmas present lined up from, you know, your uncle mm-hmm. and you want to come on the show, mm-hmm. could be a good gift. It's a great stocking stuffer.
It's a great stocking stuffer. Again, we won't be able to pay it off till late in January. But if that seems like a fun gift, we will finalize exactly what that episode will look like. But of course, we encourage you all to support Kendall in any way that you can if you're feeling generous this holiday season. So more information on that we'll post on our Instagram, so you can keep an eye out for that. But otherwise, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for co-hosting this podcast with me. We are going to go record another podcast here shortly that you will hear in a few weeks. We're very excited about. Thank you to Isabel Josen for producing. You can email us at baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. And everyone have a wonderful holiday weekend. We'll talk to you all very soon.
SiriusXM Podcasts.